What the hell did we even watch last night? I'm like still in a daze. Was that like a fever dream?
Are we talking Raptors or juniors?
Raptors, Justin. I don't even know if I've recovered from that experience.
So I had a different experience because I wasn't going to watch the remainder of the game. I had messaged you. I was like, do I need to do this?
Well, because.
And the initial answer was no.
At hockey, explain. You're not just mailing it in,
and
Justin.
And then you gave me, probably would have got there eventually. But you kind of saved me a little bit because I might have been like, I would have looked at the score and I probably would have been like, oh, yeah, okay. I gotta see this. But you were like, nah, you gotta watch this. So I go home, tired. It's late, trying to catch up.
But you still got adrenaline from your big win last night. The squad is rolling. What's your team name, just so we know for future reference?
I'm actually not sure I can say it. It's not...
Say it.
I don't know if there's innuendo. I don't know if there's innuendo.
Just say it.
We'll discuss in the break, and then I'll tell you.
You're not going to get fired. You just started.
Swinging Ducks.
It's totally fine.
I think it's fine. I don't know if there's something else there.
Swinging Ducks. It's fine.
I think it's fine. I think it's fine.
Well, now everyone's going to be trying to find out why it's not fine. Sounds good to me.
I think it's fine. Anyway. Yeah. On a high. Come down, I guess, with the Raptors. But I'm watching it knowing what's going to happen. And, of course, the impossible happened. Kevin Garnett. Impossible is nothing, apparently, when you're down 21.
The word itself says, I'm possible.
I never thought of it that way.
What? You never heard that quote?
No.
Oh, my God. I think that was in my, like, grade 6 gym class locker room.
That's a great motivational item.
The word itself says, I'm possible. Nothing's ever impossible, Justin.
I felt like I enjoyed it even more, though, because I knew what was happening. And in the moment, while the Toronto Raptors are still bricking shots under 3 minutes, knowing that they have to make up, what was it, 29? 21. 21-point deficit, whatever it was.
A mountain of
ridiculousness.
Points. That's all you gotta know.
And it's like, okay, this shot has to go in. Brick. Okay, this they gotta score here. Turnover. Now they must score here. Brick. But they, man, it, like if you wrote the script to make it as hilarious as possible, it would have been that. Because... they only get back into the game and tie it because Grayson Allen, who's the only one in the NBA who does Grayson Allen things, fouls
Man,
Gary Trent
is ridiculous.
In the manner that he did. And that's what gets it to overtime or helps it get to overtime. And then Grayson Allen comes back and hits the game winner.
Oh, my God.
Like, it was ridiculous upon ridiculousness. Anyway, we got to break down all of it. But, like, the viewing experience for me... Because you're probably like half watching, I would have said.
No, because well, the juniors game had ended, so I was
you're
dialed
just like,
fully.
Just like you're making notes. You're like, this is done.
But the problem is, I make all these notes, thinking that the game's going the way it is, and then I just go
and then it
surprises
you.
Copy all, delete.
Exactly. Yeah, but like you're
if
not.
If you're one of those writers that have to get a deadline in, you've already written your article yesterday by the end of the. Second,
oh yeah, you were done. That would have been the worst thing ever.
You just
especially because the result was the same.
New Word document. All right, so Raptors don't score a point, a single point, until 6 minutes and 48 seconds into the first quarter, and that was a free throw. They don't get their first bucket until 7.5 minutes in. I kept thinking that, like, I was split screening as well. I had the World Juniors on the main screen and Raptors mm-hmm. on my iPad. And I kept thinking, like, is there, like, a glitch? Like, do I need to restart this iPad? Because it kept saying 0 points. No, that was right. They were shooting 2 for 2 and 19 at one point.
And they started 2 for 30.
Yeah. They were leading the game at that point, though. 2 for 19. For the first 12 minutes of the game, both teams combined for more turnovers than baskets. The teams combined were 7 for 47. In the first quarter. That was the worst showing of basketball. I thought, well, ESPN is never going to come to Canada again and ever put this game on television, national television. They are going to relegate this screen to darts, which is now electric. If you haven't watched darts lately, you need to put darts in your regular viewing experience. I thought they're going to pull this.
Weren't you guys betting on darts last year? Was that a thing?
Maybe. We're going to pull this game from national television.
I like how you said that.
And put, maybe. And put any other sporting event on.
Yes.
The Scotty Barnes experience, 0 points until the fourth quarter. 0 points until the fourth quarter.
I couldn't believe, can I interrupt you just for a second? Mm-hmm. I could not believe there was even a semblance of positivity around Scotty Barnes yesterday. Yeah.
But because of the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Guess what was happening in the fourth quarter? They weren't trying to defend. It was a fake basketball game with 3 minutes left. It was all fake basketball. And then they had to start playing basketball again and scored 4 points in overtime and lost.
At one point.
Sorry. Continue.
No. At one point, and I love Sportsnet Stats Twitter account. If you haven't gone on it, what are you doing? With 3 minutes and 12 seconds left, this tweet. The Milwaukee Bucks had a 100% win probability.
Ooh.
100%, not 99.9, 100% win probability. The Raptors had a 0% win probability.
So they don't factor in Grayson Allen's extended hand and Pascal Siakam being shoved shoving Bobby Portis out of bounds, but the Raptors get the call anyway.
Well, at that point, I think that nobody believed that this game...
Is this not proof that analytics is bunk?
Yeah, that's right. The analytics junkies last night had to come down to earth.
You got
to
leave a percentage point.
The score at that point was 90 to 69. So I don't know how you're also feeling like there's a 0.4%
chance
to win that game. So I don't blame the analytics squad at that point.
Another one, like, how did the Milwaukee Bucks win an NBA championship? I know there were sitting guys... How did Mike Budenholzer win a championship?
That guy was going to blow his top last night.
What were they doing? All they had to do was dribble it out a little bit more. Like, just take your time. And they couldn't even handle 3 minutes of late game versus the Raptors with a 20-point lead. It was insane to watch.
So the Raptors go on this 28-7 run, and I'm thinking, all right, there's like half an arena left at this point. People left. I mean, I just said there was a 0% chance for the Raptors to win. Legitimately, statistically zero. They were down 90 to 69. Imagine getting off the subway. You get into Union, you lose service, you get off at, I don't know, St. Clair West, and you look at your phone, and it's in overtime. You honestly would think that you just time traveled on the TTC to a different dimension. Mm-hmm. So they...
I guess I will say the Sportsnet tweet, though, was right. They did win 100% of the time.
They did.
The Bucks won
in
that
the
game
end,
100%
but they,
of the time.
It was an improbable victory for them. Okay, so Gary Trent Jr. with that clutch three with 0.8 seconds left to send it overtime.
The only moment of real basketball in the final two minutes was that, so credit to Gary Trent Jr.
That was probably the most fun the Raptors fans have had watching the Raptors this year, was that maybe that three-minute stretch, which is a bit... tough to say, but
mm-hmm.
If you were at the game, I need to know, did you leave? That's fine.
Are you sprinting back at some point?
At that point, you can't get back in the arena. You can't re-swipe.
But like, if let's say you're down in the concourse and
well, of course, you if you're
see
still
that
there,
10 or something,
what are you doing? Then all the concessions
back.
Are closed. You can't buy beer anymore.
I think once
what are
you get
shopping?
Up after your seat, you're done. I don't think you can come back.
We always had this conversation on the show. Is like, do you leave sporting events early? I think with 3 minutes left, you're beating the traffic, like Scotiabank Arena, the parking lot of the Gardner. I don't blame you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were at that game, I need to know what was the atmosphere. We're going to talk to Katie Heindel at 7:30, I believe. And she's obviously there. Like, what was the press row like? Like, I wanted to, if I could have picked any game to just plot myself into, it would have been just the 3 minutes of that finish.
I feel like you wouldn't leave, or I wouldn't leave, because it was so much of a train wreck that you have to stick around and, like, make sure the fire goes out at the end. Like, at least the people, you know, get back, the athletes go back to their tunnel, that there isn't, you know.
Like a brawl?
Complete, not brawl,
a
but
meltdown?
Like, there isn't a meltdown, that there isn't something at the end, because it was so catastrophic. But instead, you got, you know, Scotty Barnes taking advantage of lax defense, and they get back into this thing, and Grayson Allen goes off.
So it's
hard to wrap your head around that one.
I'm trying to wrap my head around this game as well. It's the tale of two different games. It's the Raptors being basically unwatchable, embarrassing.
Yeah, and the Bucks were in
that
too.
Yeah, the Bucks too. Like they didn't blow them away. Like the first. the end of the first quarter was 13 to 12.
2 for 30 is unwatchable.
It's unwatchable. It's embarrassing. And we talked about the ESPN stakes. We talked about...
Yeah. Are you going to get a bump from that? Apparently...
Both teams got the opposite of a bump. We actually have a clip. So, obviously, there's different eyes on this game with ESPN tuning in. Maybe the first opportunity for the American audience to watch a Raptors game at home because they are just tuning into their world. Stephen A. Smith, who, you know, pumps out his own content and takes... Mm-hmm. During the first half intermission, said the following.
Let me put it simpler. It's the new year. That's butt ugly basketball in the first half. Same, I mean, have some decency, Toronto and Milwaukee. There's an audience watching. Could you give us some offense, please? Pretty please, with sugar and top. Never had to ask that for years.
No holiday,
but now we asking
no
that. I mean, damn.
Yeah. 0-15 to start the game for the Raptors.
What's horrible.
Butt ugly.
It was butt ugly.
It's a good way to put it.
And it's such a contrast, too, because you look around. We talked about this yesterday. You look around the NBA, and there are ridiculous stat lines across the board. Every team, it seems, is doing something. Even if they get scored on a lot, at least they're scoring
themselves.
Someone's
putting up like 50 somewhere.
Someone's doing something crazy, and all teams are... If the problem isn't offense. The problem is widespread across the board defense, which at least makes the game exciting. And this was the complete opposite. It was a complete nightmare from an offensive perspective.
I didn't think that anyone combined team-wise was going to get 50 at one point.
No, it was the fact
the 50
that was the funniest thing. And I'm laughing to myself in my basement over and over again, watching that, knowing what the result was, that both teams got to 100. That both teams got to 100 is a miracle.
Okay, so the tale of two games. Obviously, the first three quarters goes the way it is. It's really rough to watch. You're back in the dejected Raptors Twitter. The team looks discombobulated. It seems like they're not communicating anymore. It seems like they've lost. We talked about this with the Toronto Maple Leafs at one point. Has Sheldon Keefe lost the room? It just looks like Nick Nurse has lost this team. That's what you're seeing for three quarters. Then there's the insane comeback. There's the Raptors that have these fake comebacks all the time, but actually do it. They are down 90-69 at the 3:13 mark. They go on that 28-7 run. You see it clicking. You see the grit. And, you know, obviously I don't think Milwaukee was in it.
I'm pushing back on grit. I didn't see any grit.
But they never gave up,
Justin.
That's
the fakest of fakest comebacks.
But did they not come back? They could have easily just
needed the most ridiculous sequence of events for them to get back in.
But they,
like, I don't even,
didn't,
I
they
don't
didn't even have
feel
to
like
even
it
try
was
at
grit.
That point.
I feel like it was Milwaukee handing it away and deciding not to play any defense on Scottie Barnes. Scottie Barnes being like, oh, I can fill up the stat sheet a little bit to make my night, which started, what, pointless?
No, he had
with
0 points.
6 minutes left.
Zero.
He's like, okay, I can get a little national shine if I can go at Brook Lopez here, who is not playing defense against me. Like, there was
for
like,
sure.
I feel like they didn't do anything to earn it other than hit that final shot from Gary Trent.
No, I don't know. I don't completely agree with that. That 3 minute stretch, I think you saw a little bit of heart that the Raptors needed. This game, they needed this game because it was the Milwaukee Bucks on a back-to-back, sitting a lot of their starters. They're at home. The Raptors are about to go on probably the most important stretch that they've had in a very long time. And sure, it would have been nice to see this.
At least in terms of defining what the team
yes,
is.
Yes, exactly. It would have been great to see this for the rest of the game, but I do think that we saw a little bit of pride. Maybe it was because it was getting, as I said, embarrassing and unwatchable. So I think I can give them a little bit of credit for the grit. But in the end,
it's... Well, what I'll say, and I think what illustrates my point, is that when they had to play basketball again, when overtime started...
Well, both teams kind of went back to the
snooze
fest.
It was the exact same thing.
Yeah. So it's fake. It's a fake comeback, in a sense.
The circumstances were so far from the norm in that moment that they were able to take advantage of it. In Milwaukee, again, how did you win an NBA title? You weren't able to handle late game scenario. I just feel like everything kind of worked in their favor clearly in that moment. And they still weren't that good during that moment. As I mentioned, bricking shots still under 3 minutes. I'm like laughing every time it happens. But again, once you start playing again and you're the exact same team you were for three quarters, I was like, what? How? How does that not give you some, how does that not improve your performance And I get, like, it comes down to, like, you know, small sample shot making, whatever. Mm-hmm. But they look like the same team once they got it to a miracle overtime period. Like, it didn't make any sense to me. Other than, oh, they're just a bad team.
Well, they are a bad team. And I think that that's this, yeah. The underlying point of this is you see the great Raptors, whether it was circumstantial because the Bucks were the Bucks, and it's a 3-minute stretch and you're basically feeling like you're playing for your future at this point, a little bit of pride. But you see for 70, maybe, I guess, 85, 90% of the game, what the Raptors have been. The bench, once again, is actively detrimental to this team. They are being outscored 88. Where's that stat? Terrible. Okay. Whatever they're getting outscored.
Combined 7 points between combined, Boucher,
but over
Hernan
the last
Gomez,
two games, it's been
Achiuwa and Flynn.
It's been actively horrible.
The starters forced to play all of,
once again,
everyone but Scottie Barnes over 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
They get nothing. Combined 3 for 15 from the field, right, from the bench last night.
Yeah.
0 for 6 from 3, 1 of 2 from the free throw line.
So whether you take, you know what, like, and I see your point. If you take anything from the last 3 minutes, it still exposes the fact that you don't have enough to sustain 4 quarters of this. You don't have enough to sustain half a game of this. Like, your players are grinding themselves and the coach's staff is grinding them into the ground and there's no support. And how are you expected to win games like this, even against a depleted Milwaukee Bucks on a back-to-back who didn't look like the championship contending team that they have been? And I think that there's a lot. I don't even know how you evaluate this game if you're Nick Nurse and co. Like, if you're Masai Ujiri looking at that, because you could probably feel a frustration that your team has what it takes to be good for a bit of time. You see Scottie Barnes turning on the fourth quarter. You see opportunities for guys to make big shots when it matters, like Gary Trent. That was a great shot. Like that.
Yeah.
I don't know who else I would have felt.
The biggest positive is that there's at least something decent from Gary Trent Jr. in the game.
And that's been the trend over the last 2 weeks, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then obviously they don't pull it out in overtime, and there's an opportunity for Fred, and we don't need to, you know, pinpoint Fred's shooting problems, but.
Yep.
Then Giannis basically does it all himself at the final, 2 seconds of the game with an incredible pass, 4 guys on him, finds a way, Grayson mm-hmm. Allen sinks it. So, yeah, they didn't win, but maybe there's and I don't like doing this, a moral victory in it, because I don't feel that way at all. But, sure, they had a 3-minute stretch that was goofy and fun to watch, but in the end, we're back in the same spot. The Raptors lose once again. They are in a spot where they have one of the worst records in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
They've lost 13 of their last 18 games, and you're still in the same situation when you wake up Thursday morning of what is this team, what is the direction you're going, and that little blip of fun and excitement and maybe ESPN having at least something to air in highlights this morning that...
Not wake up full of
watching
regret
darts,
today.
You still have this unsettling feeling of, I don't know what the hell is going on with this team.
It's almost more confusing this morning than it was yesterday, and I... Not that it's like, oh, maybe they are good based on those 3 minutes. No, they're no. Not even close. Far from. But in terms of, like, what's the actual issue? Like, what is at the heart of the problem? I don't know. Like, is that just a bad shooting night? Is this just a bad shooting team? Yeah. But, like, the way you start, the way you respond to certain things, the way you deal with adversity, the way your emotions seem to hinge on whether or not this miracle comeback aided by a complete nonsensical final 3 minutes from the Milwaukee Bucks, like, where is that going to take you? It just feels like something is really fundamentally broken, and I'm sure they have a better idea within the organization what that is. You mentioned we have Katie Heindel on later. Mm-hmm. She was the first one talking about Nick Nurse. At least that I heard. And she said it on the show when she was on with us. Like, it just seems like there's something in terms of disconnect between coach and players, especially at the depths of the lineup, where it's just unproductive. And if you can't get anything from a bench, the stress it has on the starters, it all like vicious circle, mm-hmm. cyclical, everything feedbacking into each other, into itself. Like it's just a mess and it's just churning and snowballing and getting worse and worse and worse. And I don't know, again, what is at the heart of the problem? What could aid things? But it just seems like we're going down a pretty dark path right now.
And we mentioned this stretch being completely maybe the defining point of this decision point. 12 of Toronto's next 19 games are against teams above 500.
I mean, but, and we said that a month ago, like the next 13 games above 500. It's like, yeah, there are no off nights in the NBA. The schedule, as you wrote down, is going to get easier, but it's going to get easier at a time where it doesn't matter.
So with that fact that I just mentioned, 12 out of
19
are above 500. In general, the Raptors have the second easiest remaining strength of schedule this season. So there's.
And do I feel like they've had the most difficult schedule ever this year? Like, yeah, they're playing good teams every night, but that's what happens when you're a bad team. Every team is pretty good in mm-hmm. relation to you. Just, and yeah, above 500 lately. Yeah, yeah, I get all that. But like, it's not easy in the NBA. You have to be good to win games in the NBA, and the Raptors can't do it right now.
And Michael Grange has a great article out. If you haven't had a chance to read it, it's on sportsnet.ca.
Well, this is the positive stuff.
Yes. So it's on sportsnet.ca. NBA executives watching closely as struggling Raptors begin crucial homestand. That's the title.
Well, it doesn't sound as positive, but the positivity, as you'll get to, is that the Raptors do have some power here in terms of the league and the league circles.
The vultures are circling. Mm-hmm. Circling.
Circling.
And Toronto, as one source told Grange, Toronto's the first domino. They will do what they do will affect teams all across the league. Dallas, Phoenix, LA, Atlanta. Not that it's about deals with any particular team, just that people are going to be waiting to see what the Raptors do before they make their moves. Toronto could set that market.
Being able to set the market is a really good thing. It means you possess power at a time where your franchise or team is powerless. So how do you use this power? How do you arrive at the point where you're able to be that first domino if you're willing to do it? Or do you just say, hey, we're standing pat. We're going to be okay with just brutal, brutal mediocrity this year and look forward to next year and hope things change. Cross your fingers.
God, and I think...
I think I want to be the domino. I want to figure out how to take best advantage of the fact that all the teams are waiting for us to make up our minds. Now, maybe for that reason, you don't have to rush.
No, I think there's an urgency
take,
to
you
make...
You got to take advantage of this.
To take a step, because all season long...
And if it all hinges on OG and Obi moving, yeah, maybe no. Not, like, yeah, maybe this is... It's not real power. It's fake power then, maybe. It's the fake comeback. Because that's probably not happening. But if you really have chips that can set the market...
But that's why
line up for the highest bidder.
But that's why a game like this is more frustrating, because you're still in the middle. Like, there isn't a clear direction yet with this team. And this has been a conversation that we have cycled month after month. Is like, you are now, you're still in the middle. Like, there's so much.
They're barely hanging on to the middle.
Okay, but have you ever felt like there's a direction that you're seeing from the front office downwards? A movable, tangible piece of information that gives the direction of where the Toronto Raptors are going?
No,
maybe,
but
last night.
Making up their mind is still, they can still do.
But if you're the domino.
That's understandable.
There's still pressure on you to do it in a timely fashion because, yeah, these teams are waiting to be vultures, but, like, you have players that are decreasing in value right now. So
yeah. That's
an important factor. Fred VanVleet has been not very good since he returned.
True.
Gary Trent Jr. is now going upwards in trade value.
Yes.
So things are moving. These games matter.
So maybe things
matter.
Are leveling a little bit.
These games matter not for only your standings, but for how other teams perceive you, how they perceive your players, and how you make a decision where you're going. Tanking, selling, buying. Well, obviously, buying is just outside of the realm of possibility at this point.
Yeah. But there are players that could go for a bounty. We talked about the Donovan Mitchell return for OG Anunoby. Where does that leave Pascal Siakam? Things don't look favorably for a Fred trade right now, but you could still probably get something for him. Everyone's looking at Gary Trent after that, mm-hmm. over that performance, the performance he's had over the last couple of weeks since reentering the starting lineup, and even beyond that. And we need a player like that. It's all about shooting. Guy can shoot. Guy can come off the bench and shoot. There's still pieces. It's just, are you willing to do something, or do you want to just hang on and, again, have your fingers crossed that somehow, some way, you're able to add the necessary supporting talent to lift up what is still a decent core, but one that is slightly disconnected in terms of timeline and is not good enough from the bottom. Like, the floor is not good enough. Like, hilarious. The Otto Porter Jr. situation is now bordering on laughable. Like, I get it. He's got a dislocated toe. I'm sure that's tough for a jump shooter to have a dislocated toe. But, like, it just, like, a dislocated toe. And you played how many games? Counted on one hand? I'm not even sure. He's been a non-factor all season long.
And that was the only move he really made.
He was the splashy off-season addition to support the depth. And with him and downturns in performance, they have absolutely nothing to support what is an average starting lineup in the NBA, if that.
A lot of this has, in the last stretch, put a lot of eyes on Fred VanVleet, understandably. He's had a slow start on his game since return. I think that there's probably a mental aspect of it when you're going out there and you're missing buckets and you're being put in a position where that's basically all that you're getting in terms of your role, and things have changed and the starting lineup has gone up and down and upside down and backwards, and you got to find a way. You're a veteran on this team, and I feel like he's the leader, other than maybe Pascal wanting to be the guy, and he's got to face the media after games, and he's got to be asked the tough questions, and he's got to find a way to bring positivity, maybe bring some sort of energy to the podium, to maybe talk about how the dressing room's feeling right now. But
perspective, if nothing else, perspective.
What's happening behind closed doors? Anyway, we have a clip on Fred VanVleet post game talking about, you know, his role and just kind of how this stretch has gone.
My numbers will balance out at the end of the year. I just got to keep playing with confidence. Again, I think trying to squeeze as much life out of this team as possible. And the thought was to come back and try to play more winning championship caliber basketball. And you try to do that. And I haven't been able to find my touch in, you know, kind of a secondary third role as much. And when I'm aggressive, you know, I play well. So just got to keep trying to find ways to compete and bring value to the team. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's about wins and losses. And that's what keeps me up at night is the losses. It's not necessarily my individual play. As I said, it's very, very, very situational for all of us.
What do you take from that?
Well, there's always been some streakiness to Fred, right? Like yesterday we were talking about Ilya Samsonov, and if he ends up at, I think I said 9:15, maybe that's a little generous. If he ends up at 9:10.
Well, you said you don't want him to play another game this season.
But some nights it's brilliant and other nights it's awful. Like that is more frustrating than just being like reliably 9:15. And I think Fred's sort of in that spot where it's like, dude, like, can we just get some consistency from you, whether it's in game from week to week? It seems like that's an impossibility, but that's always been a part of his story. Mm-hmm. That was his part of his story in his finest moment as a Raptor, in his finest moments of a Raptor as a Raptor, when they were winning the title in 2019 and the baby comes and all of a sudden he's shooting the basketball again.
Oh yeah. I forgot about that.
So that's
dad's strength.
That's kind of Fred. And unfortunately, what do you say? Squeeze as much out of this roster. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the most telling little,
I didn't like that
turn of phrase that he included in there. You're trying to squeeze more
life out of this
as
team.
Much as you can out of a team that needs to be in the position where they're being squeezed because they're not good enough. He said it out loud without saying it. That's just sort of the reality. And when he's not performing, when he's on one of those downturns in performance, it really, really shows in the overall effectiveness of the team.
Raptors off tonight.
I still think he can go somewhere and really help someone.
Well,
secondary role for a guy like Fred?
That's it. He needs to be deployed in a position that's favorable for him now, and that's not what he's been in.
So that comes back to future and whether you want to sign another contract, whether he opts in, opts out, they opt in, opt out, whatever the situation may be. can't pay him like the all-star point guard he was in recent seasons last year. What is he now?
Well, I don't think we have much more time to find out here because it's.
Is he a trade chip that goes to a contender and brings you back a modest package?
I honestly don't know the direction. So Raptors are off tonight, obviously. Leafs taken.
Seventh from the bottom in the NBA, the Raptors are now. More easily, they can move up if you just look at it like their team and what the schedule may be. But if they start unpacking this a little bit, maybe they can't get into Detroit, Houston, Charlotte range. You get inside the top five.
No way.
Why not? Two games out of the top, or the bottom five, sorry.
I don't feel like we've strung together any point of confidence right now.
That's what I'm saying. They could be in the bottom five of the NBA.
I thought you just said top five.
Top five in terms of worst records.
Oh.
I've tried. Okay. Like they can drop down into
That's why I was like, are you good?
Speaking of a turn of phrase. They can drop.
Yeah.
They can get into the lowest level. Or maybe just at the fringe of it.
Well, as we said, that this homestand, it's a 6-game homestand, it's really important. And putting up a showing like that, it's unforgivable. And it's something that it's not going to be erased from the minds of fans, media, ESPN most specifically.
Their station next year and moving forward.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll see that again. Okay, so in more positive news, though, Canada headed to the gold medal today. Mm-hmm. Big victory over the United States, rallying from a 2-0 deficit after the first period to score 6 straight goals. I will tell you, I did not think that they were going to win that game.
No, and certainly the way they won it, it wasn't all Connor Bedard. In fact, it was... He was went down the list in terms of importance.
He gets that goal, though, to hit our wake and rake for us,
We had a successful night on World Junior Ice.
Yeah.
Halifax has been kind to us. not so much in the NBA. We go 1-for-3 or 2-for-3. Either way. It's nice, and it was encouraging, certainly, when looking at the prospects of them repeating as gold medalists, that it wasn't just all about Connor Bedard. He gets them going. Mm-hmm. But after that, the supporting cast, which hadn't been present, I made the mistake of tweeting, other than the most impactful player, maybe in history of the Canadian World Junior team, that it's otherwise impactless, that no one else could really step up and do anything. But across the board, Fantilli gets on the board.
That was
Joshua Waugh was the star of the game.
Joshua Waugh.
Stankoven gets the big goal.
Joshua. We just need to figure out how to say that.
Joshua. His first name is his full name in some ways. Anyway, but the story is Thomas Milic, the Canadian goaltender who didn't start this tournament, who comes in, plays better than Ben Gaudreau in the group stage and preliminary round, and is still showing signs, I guess, till this point where I don't know if Canada has it. That goaltending problem, it still remains. And yet he was the story. He was brilliant. He made himself a household name. And now an entire country is going to be cheering for him to get an NHL contract to go on to the next level because he's in that spot, undrafted, doesn't belong to an NHL team. No, maybe no interest coming into this tournament. And now he's made a name for himself with a performance for the ages, at least in the context of Canadian goaltenders.
Well, that's why I love the World Juniors because... Yes, there's always the storyline coming in of the superstar, the guy with the bubble, the Canadian legend in the making. You're getting pumped information about Connor Bedard. You can't even have an interview with an opposing team or a teammate without Connor Bedard being the main storyline. And deservingly so. Look what he's done this tournament. But I love the World Juniors because there's always someone that has flown under the radar completely, that has his moment on the national stage that wins the hearts of Canadians. And that is what we're seeing right now with Milic. Like
arguably the two most unheralded players on the team, Joshua Waugh, who's, I think, is he the lowest round draft pick?
So Joshua Waugh, 5th round pick to the Habs, best player last night other than Milic.
And of course, the undrafted Milic.
And the two of them in the biggest game they've had in this tournament. to take the spotlight from Connor Bedard and find a way for Canada to rally back to this victory. And they're going to bookend their tournament against a team that upset them when Milic wasn't in net. Now he's been undefeated this tournament. He comes in for Ben Goudreau and has now been lights out. It's the perfect storyline right now for Canada to wrap up this tournament tonight with a gold medal, led by yesterday's performance from two unsung heroes.
Tough night for those desperate to predict that the U.S. will overtake Canada, that Canada's power on the international stage is waning. What, they've got three of the last five. They're going for back-to-back. Four of the last six on the table if they can beat Czechia in the rematch. It's still Canada, guys.
So I have...
still Canada.
I have a heavy timeline of Americans in my time in the States. And I'll tell you...
a little anger after a couple disallowed goals?
It's exciting to split-screen Twitter with World Juniors. And at times, not exciting because people get really upset with these young athletes. And there's always
reason,
the threats to, like, this guy's the worst player I've ever seen. Like, you ruined it for Canada.
It somehow reflects, like, the heightened state of emotion in a World Junior game based on the fact that they're teenagers alone. For some reason, we start acting like teenagers.
Yes.
But that, it happens.
So watching that game yesterday, USA goes up 2-0. And I remember a minute 20 in when Logan Cooley scores that goal and he taunts the Canadian crowd. I said to myself, it's a minute 20 into the game.
See, I thought that was the opposite. I was like, oh.
No,
that was like confirmation bias to me, though.
The karma gods. And sure, it ended up being a favorable thought for me. But I don't like that, buddy. There's a lot of game left.
I thought they knew what I thought I knew, which was that the U.S. was winning that game.
Well, the United States absolutely dominated Canada in that first period. Like, they were hemmed in. Canada looked slow. They couldn't get to pucks fast enough. Obviously, the score showed the one way. The shots were in favor of the United States single-handedly. They owned that. The ice was tilted. But Milic, unfazed, big game player, no problem. Come in. Canada gets on the score sheet early in the second, and things change. But I didn't like, don't taunt the crowd. That's all I got to say. Especially because when that crowd got behind Canada, that might have been the best hockey atmosphere that I had seen in really long time. Like, Halifax was
unbelievable.
The roof was going to pop off. Singing Hey Baby, which was the goal song previously, Sweet Caroline, Ole, 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 chanting We Want Gold, chanting MVP. Like, that's the...
calling puck over glass penalties.
Oh my God,
in the
crowd. Puck over glass. Like, there was a lot of refs in the stands, I'll tell you that. But the atmosphere in Halifax when Canada got rolling certainly helps propel them to victory. If they can get on the score sheet early tonight, like, I don't know how your buddies on the other side are going to find a way.
Yeah, I still got to decide what to do with my Czechia. Yeah. They're such underdogs in the game that I can't even really do anything about
you
it.
I guess
I could put every cent that I would win on Canada and make
don't do that.
My money back. I might have to. I mean, I don't want to cheer for Czechia.
Okay, the disallowed goals, though.
I just thought it would be more of a... I mean, they did beat them 10 days ago or whatever
it was. So that's it. They upset Canada. Like, there's clearly a way that they can win this game. It's been seen. But Canada, I think, has certainly developed a lot of positives since that game. But there's still areas of weakness. Like, defensively, they don't look strong. A good thing that Milic stood on his head last night because, yeah, you can't just rely on Connor Bedard to do it all. And we saw other players step up in his, you know, absence. I'm using air quotes for that. He obviously still was got on the score sheet, but it wasn't his night.
I do think the United States were the better team overall. I mean, the score effects were strong as their, you know, U.S. was pressing and chasing the game. But this is far from the most dominant Canadian team. However,
they haven't played their best game
yet. When you talk about the crowd, and if something good and positive happens for them, a Connor Bedard goal in a big moment, with that crowd's influence,
that's home ice
how
advantage.
All of that can become almost impossible to overcome. They were never able to get started versus Czechia. They were late to start versus the United States. But once they got that moment, it was kind of like an unstoppable force at that time, at that point. And I expect if Canada gets off to a good start that it could be a walk in the park. But if they can't get that moment, if they can't get it going, then maybe Czechia can play spoiler.
Okay, so clearly Canada, a little bit of puck luck maybe with two disallowed goals from the Americans.
First one was a...
okay, the first one...
was a gift.
Never did I think that goal was going to be called back.
Yeah. I mean,
so I understand the outroar from my American friends.
Mm-hmm.
We saw some very hot takes online. The worst call ever in the history of sports.
Things are a little bit more strict in the IIHF.
I saw somebody pull up the actual rule. And when you read the rule, the wording, you think, okay, well, technically, sure, that actually does apply. But that was not goaltender interference. And then you get down.
Not in my brand of hockey,
no,
at least.
And then that's fine. Sure, maybe you get a gift there. But the second one, like, okay, that's goaltender interference. You might feel like you're getting, you know, slighted now two in a row. But the first one, sure, I can certainly say that was maybe a miscall. But the second one, no. So...
No, you can't shovel a pad into the net. Those are the rules. Those are the rules in any brand of hockey.
That's right.
The first one, definitely more subjective. The second one, it makes it worse for American fans, mm-hmm. but there's not really any arguing it.
So I was thinking, like, I actually really want the United States to, like, score another goal just to, like, erase that. So then the conversation isn't, like, you lost by one goal. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the worst. I didn't want the storyline this morning.
You didn't want Canada just fill the net like they did?
No, I did. I wanted Canada either to, like, put the puck in the net more or United States to score one, because the worst would have been if Canada won, what, 3-2, and that was the determining goal. And then we have this conversation and half the sporting world thinks that it was, you know, fraudulent. So Canada putting six in the net, that helps me feel a little better about the missed call. But you know what? That's sports. Like, it's going to happen. Like, maybe it happens tonight. So everyone can relax.
Rules are rules.
Rules are rules. IIHF
set them. Canada played within them.
But sure.
Better last night.
You got a little bump, so that's fine. Tonight, they have a chance to continue the last little streak of having success. This could be the first time. This is Canada's fourth straight appearance in the gold medal game. So they're in there. More
think,
than they're
and
not
the second
in there.
Time I think they can win back-to-back, yes. Since the time that they...
Did it on home ice as well.
Rhymed off five in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the what I would consider the heyday of the World
That's
Juniors.
That's right.
So maybe they're returning to those glory years here.
And they sure have a boost of momentum, but so does the other side of the ice, because they snuck in there and they've been a team that surprised a lot. And it'll be... I think it'll be, as you said, if Canada gets some momentum, they might roll over... Check yeah, but I'm looking forward to tonight. But you're split screening with the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are in action against Seattle Kraken. So send in your wake and rake. Maybe it's from Kraken. Maybe it's from gold medal game. We did go 3-for-3 on our IIHF picks yesterday. Not so much in our official wake and rake, but maybe we'll do another two-sided one.
That's okay. You'll take any parlay you can get. 1-for-2 in parlays.
I'll take it.
Shout out to Adam in the truck.
Yeah, Adam in the truck's
awake. He had a couple suggestions. Challenged me that I don't ever play what he suggests. Mm-hmm. I put together a little parlay based on his selections, and it hit. So thank you, Adam in the truck.
So he's already sent one in, so we'll make sure we get that in today. So send that in, 590-590. We're going to take a break. I'm going to do the A-list and set up a full day of... Great guests, Scott Wheeler, Katie Heindel, and Mike Kelly from NHL Network. That's next on the Fan Morning Show with Ailish and Justin.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
The NHL was listening, Justin. They tuned in yesterday. And they heard us hashtag justice for Willie. Because, my goodness, have they opened the door for us to start our propaganda for William Nylander to make it to the All-Star game.
We might have to do our job.
I think it's time to pull up your
socks. I don't know if just organically there will be enough support if it's like Nylander or,
it's
you know what
time
I mean?
For us to use our platform. In the past, we've done that for Beam Team, for Bing Bong, and now it's time for Justice for Willie, because the NHL announced yesterday that Emily Kaplan reported, so I'll give her some credit here, that they're going to revamp their All-Star Game selection process with the intention of including more influence from fans. The NHL Hockey Ops Department has selected the first 32 All-Stars, one from each team, including four captains from one from each division.
Yeah.
They will be revealed tonight on ESPN's broadcast of Capitals Blue Jackets game. But fans will then vote on the remaining All-Star participants. In the past, fans have only voted on the divisional captains and then the league would fill the remaining roster with the one last man in vote.
Okay, so just clarify this for me. Mm-hmm. The NHL is picking the captains and the framework of the team, well, and there'll be a couple fan voters?
So I'm reading this from our script, and it says, maybe it's just a typo, but including four goals, one from each division. Goalies, I assume.
I think so.
Okay.
Yes.
So they're picking four goalies. The league then usually would have the final vote for last man in, but what they're doing this year is they're opening the fans' option to select 12 players, two skaters and one goalie from each division. That makes more sense. To earn a trip to All-Star Weekend in Florida, you can use Twitter by using the hashtag NHL All-Star Vote to be able to vote in 12 players.
Now, I'm a little concerned about this. I'm all for
that. What? This is our opportunity.
The issue, though, is that you need to have representation from each team. There's eight teams in each division. There's only 12 spots on each roster.
The ballot boxes a bit.
No, I'm just like, okay, so let's say clearly if Toronto flexes its might, they could get a couple Leafs in with a fan vote. Mm-hmm. But where does that leave? That means no other spots, right? Because they've got to fill out the other teams. So there's going to be, I think there's going to be pitfalls with this. Like there are going to be players left off that should be on. And that happens every year anyway, because the parameters are just so tight with this. You only have a little bit of wiggle room. I just feel like this could cause some issues.
It's the John Scott era part two. Remember that?
I don't think we're going to go to that, because I don't think our buddy Merrick
or
Wyshynski or Dangle are going to be putting forth, let's say, a pick your grinder, pick your butcher. Don't expect that. Maybe we learn from our mistakes.
This is our show bet. There'll be somebody funky that gets into the All-Star.
So.
Yep.
I don't think so.
Well, then you want it to be our new show bet? Somebody funky.
What constitutes as funky?
You'll know. Somebody funky is getting in.
Zemgus Girgensons, like, didn't he get in because Latvia stuffed the ballot box once?
Somebody will be in this All-Star game that statistically should not be in this All-Star game.
Okay.
Which to me counts as funky.
Okay.
They're opening this opportunity for fans for a reason, because it's going to be like a fun social experiment. Like the John Scott thing was actually really fun when it was happening.
It worked out.
More eyes were on the All-Star game because this guy was in the All-Star game that really shouldn't have been.
So you're telling me
this year there's not going to be some sort of propaganda for, I don't know.
The John Scotts of the world don't roam around anymore. There are no John Scotts.
This is a great text line question. Who's your John Scott this year? Who do you want the NHL fans to use their power for?
We shouldn't be a part of this.
Justin, I want to be a part of it.
We began Justice for Willie. Now we're trying to squeeze someone who doesn't belong.
Well, I'm just curious.
Thought we were about integrity on this show.
Like,
Justice for Willie is a real thing. It's real justice. He should be there. Can we put our support behind William Nylander?
Yes, but I still want to know who the John Scott of this era is.
Okay, we can think about it.
I'm reading the quote tweets on this, and Jaromir Jagr has been the trending name. Get him in there. One final NHL game. See, that would be funky.
If they put him on the ballot,
he's going to win.
I would vote for Jaromir Jagr. I want to see
Ryan Jags Reeves
back.
I'm seeing. Pat Maroon.
Reeves would be fun.
That's not
funky
for you?
He's a fun guy. It's funky, though, for sure. It's in the John Scott vein.
Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, someone is getting in there, Justin. Do you want to make this our show bet? Because you're 0-2.
No, I'm 1-3. Do you not remember wearing a wedding gown?
Oh, I do remember that. I totally blacked that out of my mind. Thank you for that. 1-3, though.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Okay. Yes.
I don't think it's happening.
Somebody's getting in, Justin.
Because there's no one who's embarrassing. Ryan Reeves isn't embarrassing.
No, I know. But I'm just reading
the
quote tweets.
But he's
like,
not embarrassing.
He might. He's probably an All-Star this year at this point.
Who, Rebo?
If they're going to be voting in this many players, maybe he's not the funky one is what I'm saying. He might get in.
What? Why would he get in? That would be totally funky.
You think?
And undeserved.
All right.
He was traded. I don't know if he scored a goal yet this year.
Well, then get the Reeves propaganda going.
Well, you might have to drive it to win this bet.
I might be getting in this All-Star game. That's
justice
what we need
for
to
William Nylander. If you want to see Willie, finally, the guy who has never had a chance to be an All-Star, who's played like an All-Star all season, vote for him. Because it might not happen again with a team like the Maple Leafs, who have Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews and John Tavares and Morgan Riley and sometimes a goaltender that's worth it.
Over under 2.5 Maple Leafs that make the All-Star game.
Under.
See, if it was three, that would be with a fan vote.
The fan vote gives them the only chance, though.
That's right. So are they going to pull through?
It's a possibility now. It's just, you know, you got Florida is going to get at least two. And they just can't. It just can't be all Leafs. Should be William Nylander, though.
Here's a text in. Why do the Coyotes and Flyers get to have All-Stars? I know.
Oh, yeah. I'm with you.
That'd be pretty rough, though, if, like, 30 teams are represented and there's two teams and their fan bases.
Well, that's why Trevor Zegras is brought along when he wasn't an All-Star last year. Should he have been there from an entertainment perspective? Yes. I would argue that what he did at the All-Star game was the single most impressive thing I've ever seen. One take to pull off that move and score and produce the highlight he did. It was ridiculous. It should be more about that than, hey, we need to have a Philadelphia Flyer. Let's get... Who knows?
That's right. Name one Philadelphia Flyer.
Let's get Travis Sandheim at the game. Like, no, we don't need a Flyer.
Pierre from Maple says Ilya Labushkin.
Boosh has got...
There you go.
Boosh the Butcher. But then, is he... No, he's not with Buffalo. Is he with Buffalo? He is with Buffalo.
I think he is.
You want him over Tage Thompson? You're only getting one Sabre. So, know that your power can have consequences. You don't want Tage there, but you want Boosh.
Kevin from Hamilton says Ryan Reeves is an All-Star this year.
Based on?
Kevin's thoughts. Justin Hall, how about that?
Justin Hall, I mean...
David Ayers. I'm done with the David Ayers era.
Ryan Reeves does not have a goal in 30 games. 4 assists.
Kevin from Hamilton might be Ryan Reeves' burner text line here. Anyway.
You could involve him in some way. Just protect the rosters and leave room for William Nylander.
Alessandro from North York had to take not even a second. Ryan Reeves, obviously.
But he's not
like
John Scott.
What's your problem with Ryan Reeves?
I'm defending him. He's not like John Scott. Yeah, he's a tough guy, and he could beat people up. But he's not like... And I'm not saying John Scott was a joke either, but it became a joke. And Ryan Reeves is far from a joke.
All right, there's lots more coming in the text line. We'll get through to those all. Who do you want to be your John Scott this year of the NHL All-Star ballot? But we're going to take a break because we got Scott Wheeler on the other side. Let's break down that USA-Canada battle in tonight's gold medal match for your Canadians.